Okay. We're up to chapter 10. The last three chapters of Sefer Daniel are one unit. Chapter 10 is going to be the introduction to that unit. There's going to be a vision. It's the final vision of Daniel. But this chapter, chapter 10, gives us the introduction. Well, who's going to be the one who will grant him the vision? Where does it take place? All of that is in this chapter. So, let's see if we can do it. Bishnat Shalosh LeKoresh Melech Paras. In the third year of Koresh, king of Persia. Dovar Nigla LeDaniel. Something was revealed to Daniel. And over here the word Dovar means not more than a thing. There are words that are going to be issued from God that will lay out before Daniel the course of history until its very end. That's what we're going to have in chapters 11 and 12. Dovar Nigla LeDaniel, there was something that was revealed to Daniel, Asher Nikra Shmo Belshazzar, whose name was called Belshazzar. Now it's interesting, why indeed is this mentioned now? This was mentioned at the beginning of the Sefer, and it was mentioned once in the middle, and we'll see in a moment why it's mentioned here. Well, we said this is the last prophecy. When is this? This is the third year of Koresh, king of Persia. At the very beginning of the Sefer, chapter 1 began by telling us that in the third year of King Jehoiakim of Yehuda, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came up against Israel, and these young people were taken as captives to Babel. The last pasuk in the first chapter, I will read it. Vayehi Daniel ab shnat achat lekodesh hamelech. Daniel served in Babel until the first year of Koresh, king of Koresh the king. Now, here we have the final date in the Sefer is 2 years later. And 2 years later, in the third year of Koresh, he gets this final vision. What did it mean at the beginning of the book when it said, until the first year of Koresh? Until the first year of Koresh, Daniel served as an officer, as a sar, a minister in government, regardless of whose government it was. He was the perennial sar, the perennial minister. He was minister in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, in the days of his son Abednego, in the days of a grandson Belshazzar, and then Daryavesh, king of Medes, who brings down the Babylonian Empire, the king who immediately follows him, Daryavesh, Darius the First, the one who follows him, is his son-in-law, Koresh. Koresh is king of Persia. Now you will recall that Babylon was brought down by the Medes and the Persians. And throughout all of Sefer Daniel, they are referred to as Madai and Paras. In Megillat Esther, there's always talk of the officers and the ministers of Paras Umadai. Because when the conquest of Babel took place, the ones who headed the coalition were the Medes, because they were represented by the great conqueror Darius, king of the Medes. The king of Persia, Koresh, was his son-in-law. I would say slight nepotism, but they were great kings. Daryavesh lived only for a year after he brought down Babel. And the one who assumed the throne afterwards was Koresh, his son-in-law. Now there's going to be another Daryavesh later. Darius II is going to be the son of Ahasuerus and Esther. There are going to be a few kings until we come to Ahasuerus. And now it means the following. We can also make a certain calculation, and the Mefarshim make the calculation over here. According to the Ibn Ezra, Daniel was about 15 years old. He was 15 years old when he came, when he was taken to Babylon. No, he became a minister. Remember, there was a 3-year period of time during which he studied, and then he was tested. He must have been Derry's age when he became a minister in Bavel, or younger. Now, do you know how many years have passed from then till the end of this Sefer? Somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 years. He's 90 years old now. And wait a minute, he's still going to be on the scene, certainly according to the Gemara, that says that when Mordechai went out into the streets of Shushan and cried that cry of agony, wearing ashen sackcloth, and Esther sends out Hatach, a fellow called Hatach, or Vitach, sends him out to give a change of clothing to Mordechai. That was Daniel. And the Gemara he's well over 100 at the time, easily over 100. And there was it's clear, certainly for a period of 70, 80 years, he served and functioned as one of the ministers in the cabinet of both the kings of Bavel and Persia. The Gemara says, why was he called Hatach? The Gemara says, Hatach zeh Daniel, this is Daniel. Lama nikra shemo, why is his name called Hatach? Shechotchuhu migidulato, they had cut him from his greatness. In other words, he was no longer a minister. You know, maybe people should know what?
Time to retire.
Exactly what I was going to say. Some people just remain ministers or chavrei knesset forever.
And how many kings did he actually
read? Nebuchadnezzar, Aved Nego, Ben Shatzar, Daryovesh, Koresh. No, then he wasn't serving. She asked me under how many kings did he serve as an, and that's a period of well over 70 years, no question about it. Because we're talking about Nebuchadnezzar was king for 45 years, Aved Nego was king for 23, Belshazzar was king for 3, Koresh, Daryovesh for 1.5, Koresh, not sure exactly how many. But he didn't start at the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. It must have been about approximately the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So if we're going to take, let's make an approximate cheshbon. 70, 73, how much is 73 minus 8? 65 plus 15?
80.
That's it. He's at least 80. Now Esther and Ahasuerus are going to be another 18 years down the line. We don't know. Because there is a possibility that even after all this, Daniel went on Aliyah. Daniel went on Aliyah. And there are a number of opinions whether he did or he didn't. But that's going to be related to the question of what was the degree or the level of his prophecy, which we never talked about here, but I finally said that. Huh? Who? Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Malachi is the last of the prophets. Daniel is at the same time as Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. By the way, we'll see the history in just a moment here in this chapter. But there is a question of whether Daniel ever went on Aliyah. What difference does it make? Because according to nearly all of the Rishonim, and I'm talking about the Rambam and Rav Sadia Goyen and Rashi and the Ibn Ezra, the Ralbag, according to everybody, the book of Daniel is not part of the books of prophets. It's one of the books of the holy writings. And the Rambam says it in the Mora Nevuchim, that everybody agrees that Sefer Daniel is one of the Ketuvim. There are Nevi'im and there are Ketuvim, the holy writings. Holy writings means that it was written Beruach HaKodesh, with divine inspiration. But there's a difference between divine inspiration and prophecy. There's a difference between Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and Daniel. However, you have to understand the following. It's possible for a prophet to both be a prophet and also be one who has composed a book of holy writings. For example, David and Shlomo are listed in the list of 48 prophets that were sent to the Jewish people. The Gemara in Megillah says there were 48 prophets that were sent to the Jewish people. And they list amongst them David and Shlomo. Now David and Shlomo wrote Tehillim, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, Kohelet. But since Tehillim, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet were not an act of prophecy, it was written with divine inspiration and not prophecy. And what differentiates it from prophecy? Prophecy is where a man is sent by God with a message to the Jewish people. In the entire book of Daniel, there's no place that Daniel communicates any of the information here to the Jewish people. He is never told by God, Lech Emor, go tell to the Jewish people. Rashi in Masechet Megillah lists the 48. And in the list of the 48, he lists Daniel. That is, he has a list that comes from a Sefer, an early Sefer called the Seder Olam, if it was yet well before Rashi, it's from the time of the Tanoim. And then when he comes to the end of this long Rashi in the Gemara, in Megillah, he says, now, Daniel has to be removed from this listing. And we'll see right away, in this chapter, we will see why he removes Daniel from the list. He removes Daniel from the list. So then, of course, here comes the most beautiful thing of all. When Rashi makes an accounting of who he sees as the prophets, he ends up with 46 and not 48. So what do you think Rashi says? Great Rashi. Ushnayim, and two of them, Ini Yodea. I don't know. Every time I come to a Rashi like that, and I don't know, it has been my fortune in the last few weeks as I learned Tanakh, I've come about 5-6 Rashis like that, I fall in love with Rashi all over again. He doesn't know. He's not the... Not a diplomat. A man who searched for truth. And if there should be 48, and he doesn't have the 48, says Eini Yodea. And then, of course, all the Mefarshim, when Rashi says Eini Yodea, everybody has to come up, you know, Echad Ani Yodea, Shnayim Ani Yodea, until everybody becomes an Ani Yodea. Who else? You know, it just didn't add up. And there are questions about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and here and there there are a few Nevi'im that are mentioned in Melachim as having come and said one sentence to a king. So it's a question of whether they're listed or not. And then there are the Sheva Nevi'os. Sorry, I don't want. There are 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses. And Esther is listed as one of the prophetesses, and somebody questioned me on that, but we've taken care of it with Sarah. And Sarah is also one of the prophetesses. By the way, the Gemara says that the number of prophets that arose in Jewish history to the Jewish people were kiflayim kiyotze mitzrayim, double the number of people who went out at the Exodus. 600,000 went out in the Exodus, so that means there were 1,200,000 prophets during Jewish history until Haggai Zechariah Malachi. So what happened to the messages of the 1,200,000 prophets? Says the Gemara, Nevuah shenitzricha ledorot, prophecy that was necessary for all generations, nechtava, was written. Prophecy that was not necessary for all generations was not written. Because take a look, the Navi served a number of functions. I would say that the Navi was advisor. The first time a Navi appears, after Moshe Rabbeinu, Shaul is looking for the donkeys that his father lost. So his servant, after they've gone through Eretz Binyamin for a few days, and his servant turns to him and he says, listen, your father most probably has stopped worrying about the donkeys, and he's worried about us. And he says, listen, we're going near this town, the Ro'ed, the seer is there, let's go ask him about the donkeys. It means there were prophets who would give people advice about professional advice, maybe stock market advice. I don't know what. In other words, you had a tzara. I don't know about whether they went every Rosh Chodesh to the Navi, but the important thing is there were many Nevi'im, and it was in a sense similar to a Rebbe, a Rosh Shiva, where you went to for advice, except that the Navi's advice was on a much higher level. So there were many prophecies that were said to people, but they were all of a personal nature, so that of course was not written, and that did not become part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. What became part of the Kitvei HaKodesh? When God appears to a Navi and tells him, go say such and such to the Jewish people, that is necessary for all time, and that became part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. In Daniel, everything that's written in Daniel is the history of the Jewish people, but never once do we hear, first of all, God speaking directly to him. Never. We've seen already angels speaking to him, and there are going to be angels who will speak to him in this chapter as well. But even then, he was never told, go tell this to the people of Israel. In a sense, these were his own notes, and Anshei Knesset HaGadolah that included Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, who we're going to see, by the way, they were the ones decided that all of this should be written for all time. This Koresh, what's happening in the third year of Koresh? This is already 2 years after Daniel is no longer serving as a minister. Remember, his serving as a minister goes from the days of Nebuchadnezzar until the first year of Koresh. Something happened between the first year of Koresh and the third year of Koresh, and that's what we're talking about in this chapter. In the first year of Koresh, remember we learned Ezra, the opening chapter in Ezra is precisely like the last few psukim in all of Tanakh at the end of Divrei HaYomim. Koresh makes the great announcement that anybody amongst the Jewish people who wishes to go on Aliyah, you understand, Koresh, king of Persia, is the one who gives permission for Jews to return home. Mi bachem mikol amo, who is there from in his entire people, God's people, the God of heaven, whom he recognizes as a God of heaven in Yerushalayim. In other words, Koresh, as we learned at the beginning of Ezra, he limits God, first of all, to the heavens, and second of all, if he has any influence on the face of this earth, it's only in Yerushalayim. And the end of Tanakh is Hashem Imo, let God be with him, V'ya'al, and let him go on Aliyah. And Koresh is the one who calls upon all people to assist the Jewish nation, or those who decide, who choose to go on Aliyah. He sends along a tremendous amount of gifts. He sends some of the clay Bet HaMikdash. 3 years later, there is a new edict that is issued by this same Koresh that all of the settlement policy is an obstacle to peace in the Middle East. And he therefore calls a halt, one, to all construction in and around Yerushalayim, and that's where the Jewish community was. And according to many opinions here in this chapter in Daniel, he calls a halt to any further aliyah. No further aliyah will take place. Why does he do this? Because you will remember from Ezra that there were the members of the indigenous population, the Tzorei Yehuda u'Binyamin, the oppressors of Yehuda and Binyamin, the indigenous population here who were opposed to any kind of construction or aliyah. Does it sound so familiar? Is it amazingly familiar? I mean, all of these are in the Pesukim. It's history. Love is repeating itself. It's unbelievable. By the way, in Ezra we also learned that there were a number of Jews who sided with the oppressors of Yehuda and Binyamin, the Indigs, and the Henry Siegmans this morning in the Jerusalem Post. If you read Henry Siegman, I was his rabbi, and I take no responsibility for it. He was a member of my community in West Hempstead. He was the first one, 25, close to 30 years ago, the first one to write an article calling for Palestinian statehood. You understand? Before anybody was able, and I read this article, I wish I'd been cranked about him this morning. I tried my best. He's one of my failures. Yeah, went to Torah V'Das, got Slicha from Torah V'Das, but he's not terribly Orthodox today. Not terribly Orthodox today. I tried my best. Maybe he would have been worse if not for the profound influence that I had on him. But you should know that as a Balabas, I have to say this in his defense, as a Balabas, despite the fact that there was most probably not a single thing that we ever agreed on, we were absolutely two opposites, Netanyahu and Mordechai, you understand? Always conducted himself with great respect. Publicly respect for the Hav, I'm sure that he, Mamish, despised every position I took. He was also one of those who was extremely involved in interfaith dialogue. He was a common visitor to the Vatican and the Pope. Okay. Yeah, so of course it was my luck to attack one of his meetings with the Pope on Shabbos in Shul at a bar mitzvah that a whole bunch of non-Jews came to. But it turned out afterwards that they weren't Catholics, so they were more thrilled about my attack on the interfaith dialogue with the Pope. You know, the ones who were upset? My liberal Jews in Shul who were upset, but the Christians, the non-Jews who were there, they laughed it all up. Alright. Bishnat Shalosh the Koresh Melech Paras in the third year, that's 2 years. 2 years after he had given permission for Jews to go on Aliyah and build Yerushalayim and the Bet HaMikdash. 2 years later, because of the pressures that were brought by the indigenous population who were opposed to it, Koresh called a halt to everything. No Aliyah, no Binyan Bet HaMikdash, no Binyan Yerushalayim, everything comes to a complete stop. And therefore, Daniel is very, very troubled, and we're going to see how he's going to react at this time. He's going to fast, he's going to pray, and we've already seen him pray a number of times. All of chapter 9 was really the great prayer, or a good part of chapter 9 was the great prayer of Daniel. There was also one other prayer of Daniel. He prayed in chapter 2. We can back this up to a little review. Anybody remember what happened in chapter 2? Very good. The dream, the first dream of Nebuchadnezzar, where he doesn't even remember what the dream is, and he calls upon all of the great people, of all the great wise men of his realm, to tell me the dream. So they say, King, tell us the dream and we will interpret it. And the king gets angry and he says, I've told you already that I don't know the dream, and you're trying to buy time. And he issues an edict to destroy all the wise men of Babel. Daniel comes to the executioner and he says, wait, give me a little time. And he prays to God to reveal to him what was the dream and what was the meaning of the dream. And the Rebbe Yishuv sends him in a chalom, in a chizayon. He sends him the message of the dream. And Daniel comes running and says, halt the execution of the wise men of Bavel. And the wise men of Bavel. So first of all, I don't even mind the fact that Daniel was concerned even about non-Jewish wise men. He didn't want the destruction, the execution of innocent people. Included in them, of course, also would have been Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Why did I tell you that? Why did I tell you that? Because he prayed. It was a senior second. But it could have been much more than a senior second, but you saved me from it. Bishnat Shalosh Lekoresh Melech Paras. So we know what the history now is. There are the beginnings of very, very beginnings of a Jewish community in Yerushalayim. Jews have returned. They've begun. They've already laid the foundations for the Bet HaMikdash. Zerubbabel is the governor, so to speak. He is from the house of David. Yehoshua is the Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua ben Yehoshadah is the Kohen Gadol. It's a community that is suffering economically from within. There is hatred from without. They are under constant fear of attack, and now finally the blow has fallen. No more Jews allowed in Eretz Yisrael. No more Aliyah. Stop the construction of the Bet HaMikdash in the middle. No construction of Yerushalayim. So this is all Bishnat Shalosh of Koresh Melech Paras, in the third year of Koresh, the king of Paras. Dovah Niglo to Daniel. Words, a message was revealed to Daniel. Ashenikreshmo Belshazzar, whose name was called Belshazzar. The reason why they refer to his original name is in order to bring us all the way back to the beginning of the Sefer. In his opening in the Sefer is, he's Daniel, he's called Belshazzar. And now the closing, that same Daniel who's called Belshazzar, is the one who has been the officer or the minister in the governments of Babel and Paras all of this time. The same one. It's not two Daniels, not two Belshazzars. The same Daniel called Belshazzar from the beginning, chapter 1, is the one who now receives this vision at the end of the Sefer. Ve'emet ha'davar. And what he is told is absolutely the absolute truth. V'tzavo gadol. The word v'tzavo gadol has a number of meanings according to the Mefarshim. One says very simply v'tzavo gadol that he's going to be told about great armies, the movement of great armies through history. Tzavo gadol, the word tzav, and we had it here in Sefer Daniel. Also, the word tzavo or tzavi means will, ratzon. Chafetz. There is a great will on the part of God, essentially, to do good to the Jewish people. That Tzavo Gadol, this great will, is going to be revealed to him. The word Tzava also, and this is in Eov, the word Tzava in Eov means something that takes place after a long period of time. A Tzava is an epic, an era, a period. Tzava Gadol, this is going to take place over a long period of time. We're not talking about something that's going to happen now, immediately, but long period of time.
Also, so, angels.
There's a pshat that says angels? Okay, all right. It can also be, Tzivot Hashem. Tzivot Hashem. So the mighty forces. All right, very good. So what happens? So it's ubin et hadavar, and he's told to understand this ubino lo bamar'eh. Bin et hadavar, according to the Mefarshim, is that whoever is studying the Sefer, and you're going to read the next two chapters, next three chapters, understand it. Ubin et hadavar, you have to understand what is being said here. Ubino lo Daniel understood the mare, the vision that he was shown. Now, in this first
pasuk in this chapter is really an introduction to the chapter. It's not as in many other places in Daniel, where Daniel speaks in first person, and I saw and I experienced. This was put in by Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who wrote it, and immediately in the next pasuk we're going to have the personal report of Daniel. In those days, Ani Daniel, Ayiti Mitabel, I was in mourning, Shlosha Shavuim Yamim. According to nearly all of the Mepharshim except for Rashi, the Shlosha Shavuim Yamim are 3 weeks. 3 weeks of days. 21 days. Rashi holds that it's 21 years. There was a period of mourning for 21 years that Daniel personally goes through. But in terms of the pshat that it's 21 days, so there are going to be two shittas what the 21 days are. The lesser accepted one, of course, is the 3 weeks from Shavuos of Tammuz until Tisha B'Av, that's 21 days. But many of the Mepharshim reject that, because the fact is that Shavuos of Tammuz was not a date of significance after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. The first Beit HaMikdash, the city walls were breached on the ninth day of Tammuz. We mark Shavuos of Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, as the day on which the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, because that's when they were breached at the time of the destruction of the second temple. The destruction of the first temple was more than a 21-day period. In other words, there was a 3-year siege. But when we're talking about final destruction of the city, say Yirmiyahu, and at the end of Malachim, it says that it was on the ninth day of Tammuz that the Babylonians broke into the city, and the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is going to take place on the 10th day of Av. So you don't have a precise 3-week period during the time that was within Daniel's own experience. From the Perek, it will seem, it's from the 4th of Nisan until the 24th of Nisan. He's going to go through a period of mourning that is going to cover all of Pesach. It just ended a few days ago, earlier this week, from the 4th of Nisan until the 24th of Nisan. And as we pointed out, what is he mourning about? He is mourning about the fact that the great return of the Jewish people has come to an end. Now you see? So, Sarah, she has now given me the opportunity to... We couldn't have done this routine any better than you did it. Right. Unbeknownst to you, you've fallen into a trap. Because her question is that in the month of Nisan, you're not allowed to be in mourning. And for that matter, she most probably would extend it to say, this is of course an extremely secular thing, the idea of having Yom HaShoah in the month of Nisan. Why did those secularists do this? And we have to mark this day? So, what time did you come to shul this past Shabbos? Were you in shul on Shabbos? So you didn't hear what the rabbi said at the beginning of the sermon?
Yeah, those of us who don't live in...
So those of you, for the benefit of those of you who don't live in Har Nof, I just read one sentence from the Luach. Two sentences from the Luach, and they're extremely important. And it's good that you ask the question, because it's going to explain really what has to be explained over here. The Luach says the following. One of the tefillot that we say before Musaf on Shabbos is Av Harachamim. Av Harachamim is really a Yizkor. It's a Yizkor for the dead, the departed, Tzaddikim, Chassidim, plain Jews, Jews who've been killed, slaughtered, exterminated. That's what Avarachamim is. So first of all, you can ask a simple question. What's an Avarachamim doing on Shabbos altogether? What are you doing with an Avarachamim on Shabbos? But it's more than that. During the month of Nisan, we don't say Avarachamim on Shabbos, just as we don't say Tachnun every day after Shmoneh Esrei. Says the Luach for this past Shabbos, which was Shabbos Shmini, says the Luach, Omrim of Harachamim. You say of Harachamim, even though it's in the month of Nisan, even though it's a Shabbos that we bench Rosh Chodesh. Never say of Harachamim, or usually don't say of Harachamim. If you're benching Rosh Chodesh, I'll tell you a story about that if you... I just remembered a West Penstead story, one of the classics of all times. But anyway, you don't say of Harachamim in Nisan, you don't say of Harachamim on Shabbos that you bench Rosh Chodesh. If it's a plain Shabbos that you would say of Harachamim, that there's a bris in Shul, you don't say of Harachamim, just like you don't say Tachnun when there is a bris. Says the Luach Eretz Yisrael, that on this past Shabbos, Omrim of Harachamim, even though it's the month of Nisan, even though it's Rosh Chodesh benching, and even if there'll be a bris in Shul, for that matter, even if there'll be 100 brises in Shul, the Luach doesn't explain. The Luach doesn't explain. So I explained what it is that the Luach left out. And one of the people who's done a tremendous amount of work on this is Daniel Sperber. He brings all of the sources on this. Av HaRachamim was composed during the Crusades. Most of the Jewish communities of the Rhineland, France, Germany, were destroyed utterly in the Crusades between Pesach and Shavuos. Gedolei Yisrael at the time, in memory of hundreds of thousands that may have been slaughtered during that period of time, in a sense it was a mini Shoah, they composed of HaRachamim. And since all of this took place during the period between Pesach and Shavuos, they composed it that it should be set on Shabbos in this period of time, regardless of all other halachic considerations, to the extent that when we're going to come to Shabbos Mevarchim of Chodesh Sivan, or even if Shabbos turns out to be Erev Shavuos, you say of HaRachamim. I don't understand. Why didn't somebody tell the Gedolei Yisrael of the time, Rashi, the Bali Tosfos, all of the great people, in Nisan, you're going to make some kind of ceremony of mourning in the month of Nisan? The Maharami Rutenberg, what kind of Tzionista Shemaisa is this? Now here we have, clearly in Halacha, because that wasn't time. That's what they did, by the way. You know what else is fascinating? That Gedolei Yisrael at the time recognized the enormity of the tragedy that had befallen the Jewish people, and they didn't wait 10 years or 20 years or 50 years until they finally decided that they were going to set aside some day or permit some tefillah to be written in memory of hundreds of thousands who were slaughtered. They did it immediately. And we're still fighting around 50 years later, and we cannot join with all of Klal Yisrael in an act of unity on a Yom HaShoah, because it's Nissen. It's Nissen. What do you mean it's Nissen? The same thing is true. Daniel sees Klal Yisrael. Nissen has turned into an eighth song for them, so you fast the Nissen. Proof. Give me a proof. When did Mordechai and Esther and all of Shushan fast for 3 days? Your Gimel, your Dalet, Tesvav of Nisan. Do you understand? They didn't have a Seder. Because Eis Tzorehi LeYaakov, it is a period of tragedy. Doom is looming over an entire people. So you know what? You know what? I think there's a certain defiance involved over here. I mean, just a thought that comes to me now. You don't have to accept it. For Ben Shalom, if you're going to permit the destruction of the Jewish people, then you know what? There will not be anybody around to sit down to the Seder next year. And if that's what you want, we're going to start right now. That's all. Yes?
Where does it come from that you mustn't buy technically?
Oh, very good. But I'll tell you, I'm going to show you something over here also that's fascinating. First of all, because Nisan is Chodesh HaGeulah. First mitzvah, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem, this month unto you is Rosh Chodeshim. But then the Shulchan Aruch goes further. It was in this past Shabbos, you know, it's even more fascinating. The source not to say Tachnun or of Harachamim in Nisan was in last Shabbos' Pasha, and despite that we said it, oh God, this is great. Because the Shulchan Aruch says the dedication of the Mishkan started on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And for the first 12 days of Nisan, each one of the heads of the tribes brought a sacrifice at the dedication of the Mishkan. So that's 12 days in the month that are already Yontif, because every day of dedication was a day of Yontif. Then you have another 7 days of Pesach, which is Yontif, and Erev Pesach, which is a Yontif because of the Korban Pesach. So it turns out that Rov HaChodesh, most of the month, the Shulchan Aruch says, most of the month is already Yontif. Since most of the month is Yontif, therefore you don't say Tachnun all month. So here is this, but there is one thing that is also very fascinating. The Shulchan Aruch lists a number of days during the course of the year that are days of fasts of tzaddikim, the fasts of the righteous, because righteous people died on that day. One of them is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because who died on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Nadav Aviu. That was last week's Sedra. Nadav Aviu, at the dedication ceremonies of the Beit HaMikdash, they died. Yeah, but the Shulchan Aruch wants to point out that we should not make the mistake of thinking that Nadav Aviu were sinners. Nadav Aviu were over-passionate
zealots.
No, not zealots and not zealots. Over-passionate, extremely pious people. But they made a mistake. An over-passionate, pious person can make a mistake. And they made a mistake. In their sense of overwhelming love and closeness to God, they wanted to bring a sacrifice of their own. And that when that first moment came, that somebody was going to, in a sense, create a halacha of his own, the Rebbe had to strike them down immediately. As an indication for all time, you can't create halachas of your own, and in terms of serving me, I decide how I wish to be served, and not men. So the halacha is, and this is not known, and sometimes it comes as a surprise, if a wedding is to take place on a Rosh Chodesh, so Chosin and Kala don't fast, unless the wedding is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So you understand? Nisan, that's Nisan, and it's Rosh Chodesh, and all the rest. The only month we're on Rosh Chodesh, because it's a day of Tainus Tzaddikim. There's another Tainus Tzaddikim in that month. Shulchan Aruch says that Miriam passed away on the 10th day of, the 8th or the 10th of Nisan. She passed away. That's also the day of Tainus Tzaddikim, which means the following. We're going to see that the month of Nisan, throughout history, if there is tragedy that looms over the Jewish people, or tragedy that in fact takes place, so you mark it. Daniel receives the news that an end to construction of the Beit HaMikdash, which means that little community of Jews in Jerusalem with no Eret Aliyah, all gates are closed. This is going to sound the death knell, the end of that Jewish community. So he mourns 3 weeks. And the 3 weeks are from the 4th of Nisan until the 24th of Nisan.
He leaves the government, huh?
He's already out of the government. Okay. He's been out of the government for 2 years now. I have a feeling. Now, it's only one opinion that he was removed from government. Somehow or other, I don't have proof for it, but if I look long enough, I'll find it. I feel the following. In chapter 9, Daniel prays, now look, this is my pshat, this is the way I see it. Daniel prays that God should let him know when are the 70 years that Yirmiyahu spoke about 70 years, at the end of 70 years the return to Zion is going to begin. And according to his calculation, the 70 years had come to an end and nothing is happening. So what is really being told is that there The real calculation is going to take you another few years down the line. Do you know when the calculation that he is told in the chapter before, you know when it ends? In the first year of Koresh. Do you know when, what he's been told, that there's another 18 years, and at the end of that 18 years is going to be 70 years from the time of Churban itself, the destruction? Do you know what Daniel was waiting for more than anything else? And this is what he prayed for. When will there be the Pekida that God is going to remember the Jewish people? When is the return to Tzion going to begin? The moment it happens, in the first year of Koresh, when Koresh announces that anybody wants to go on Aliyah, Hashem Imoviyah, let God be with him and let him go up, do you know what Daniel sees? He has completed his task. He's taken them through the Golus. He has taken them through the 70 years of Golus Babel, and most probably he saw himself as having, because he was in the first wave of exiles that were taken to Babel, and that he was zeicha to be a minister, he understood that his position was there for only one purpose. He was there to see the Jewish people through the exile. And the moment that it comes to an end, Daniel feels he has done his job. He's taken them through the 70 years. And therefore, 2 years later, all of a sudden, the great shock. 2 years later, he thought, and don't we always feel like this? There have been moments in the last 50 years that we thought that this is it. Klal Yisrael is now set for all time. And then comes the disappointment afterwards, and you have to learn how to live with the disappointments. 2 years later, after Daniel has already, in a sense, left government because he feels that he succeeded. He took them through Golus Babel, and he sees Jews on their way to Eretz Yisrael. That's what he wanted. That was his task. So now he is in a state of shock, and therefore he's going to turn to the Rebbeinu. Yes, you wanted to ask something?
Yeah, it's something I wanted to bring in that to help get. Does he do the fact that he changed the Hebrew away from Aramaic?
That's a beautiful idea.
What'd you say?
I'll tell you, that's a beautiful idea. In chapter, it's already chapter 8 that he switches, is it chapter 7 or 8 that he switches to Hebrew? So she asked, or I think she didn't really ask, she made it sound like a question, but she was making, as she usually does, a very definite, good statement. A Zionistic statement, precisely. In other words, the change back to Hebrew is because the period of the Golus is coming to an end. I mean, I want to get it on tape. I don't know if you're right, but there's something about it that sounds very good. And that now there's the return to Babel, so from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. And by the way, that's going to coincide precisely with what Anshei Knesset HaGadolah did. We learned early in the year, we learned the Rambam that says that when Jews came back from Golus Babel, they couldn't speak a straight sentence in Lashon Kodesh, and that because their languages had become mixed with Ashdodit and Kazdit and all sorts of other languages, and therefore the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah had to compose a Shmoneh Esrei so that a Jew should be able to pour out his heart to God in proper language. Maybe that already represents the return to Lashon Kodesh. Could be. One moment, we're going in order. Go ahead, Sarah, you're next. That's exactly what I had in mind. That first pasuk in Ezra. In other words, this is what Yirmiyahu felt, that his responsibility is to take them to the end of the 70-year period, and the end of the 70-year period of Golus is the first year of Koresh.
Was written by
Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. It could have been Ezra himself. Remember, Ezra, one of the opinions of the Gemara, I read that to you, one of the opinions of the Gemara is that Malachi was Ezra. The last of the prophets was Malachi. And Malachi is not really a name. Malachi is a title, my messenger. My messenger was Ezra. So it may very well be that now while he thought that you know the process of return is on the way, nothing will impede it, all of a sudden, 2 years later, everything comes grinding to a halt. So therefore, he fasted for 3 weeks. Lechem chamudot lo achalti, desirable bread he didn't eat. In other words, he didn't eat the fine bread made of fine flour. Ubosov yayin lo boi lp, meat and wine did not come into my mouth. Gesoch lo sachti, I didn't. Usually it's translated as anointing with oil, but really it means washing with something more than water alone, but with soap. Avmelot shloshet shavuim yamim. And this is how he conducted himself for this period of 3 weeks. By the way, there are opinions that say the way in which he conducted himself in his 3 weeks became part of our custom for our 3 weeks. Yeah, but since we can't do it for 3 days, even though Farshim said that there were tzaddik in the dome that did it for 3 weeks, but remember, we Ashkenazim, of course, do it for the 9 days from Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av. Achenu Hasfaradim, they begin with the week of Tisha B'Av. They don't stop eating, huh? Shavuach Shechal Bal Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av, which means really that if Tisha B'Av comes out on a Sunday, they're home free. They can drink wine and eat. For that matter, weddings, they make weddings up until Rosh Chodesh Av. We stop making weddings by Shavuos of the Talmud. I remember the first time I passed some wedding hall over here in Eretz Yisrael, and it was after Shavuos of the Talmud, there was a wedding going on. I thought, like, what kind of sinners be these people? No, that's it. They have a different minhag.
Wait a second. Is that a wedding like that? Is that not our minhag?
Yeah, you can't.
That's a good question.
Also, they make weddings during Svira.
With regard to Svira, so I get this question nearly every year. There is a tshuva for Rav Moshe that says basically that weddings, the prohibition of weddings is not on the guests, it's on the people getting married. Which means, therefore, if somebody's minhag is between Pesach and Rosh Chodesh, tomorrow night, Thursday night, yeah, there are people who have a minhag that they do have weddings in this week. What happens if you're invited to a wedding in this week, and then you're invited to a wedding after Lag B'Omer? So Rav Moshe says you can go to both. Because the Isser, if any, is on the person who's getting married. But I'm only a guest who is invited. Who's invited them? Yeah, so the music is for them.
People, if we have 7 or 9 weeks for them, well, how much time do we need for the show up?
You're right. They're taka. People who are sensitive to it, so the Avah Chachmim every week should be not only for. It has to be for Jews who suffered during any period of time. The Avah Chachmim has to be taken seriously. Did you ask your question?
I didn't ask the question, but I have a question.
Oh.
The question of the switch in language doesn't make sense. Because, first of all, it wasn't written by Daniel. And second of all, he shouldn't be writing in Hebrew now if that was the...
Oh, no, because Jews are back in Eretz Yisrael already.
Yeah,
they're back in Eretz Yisrael. Once Shivas Tzion has begun... Once Shivas Tzion has begun, but this we've just thrown out as a theory today. We have to investigate it further.
But it's the fact that it was written by the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, not by
Daniel. Well, so there's certainly. Yeah, so if it's written by the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, why did they write the previous chapters in Aramaic?
I don't know.
Oh. That's the question. We're concerned about the switch.
Right.
So it may, I'm just throwing it out as a theory, as a possibility, that that once we're talking about the beginnings of the return, then Hebrew becomes the language. All right, let's go. Ubiyom esrim varbo lachodesh harishon. Now you see, here is the proof, of course, that we are talking about Nisan. The Mefarshim says the simple meaning of the pasuk is that it's the 24th of Nisan. That's all, because only Nisan is referred to as Achadash Harishon. There's nothing else that's referred to as Achadash Harishon. Hushi Dekel. The two great rivers of Mesopotamia are the Tigris and the Euphrates. That's the Prat and the Chidekel. Does anybody know what Mesopotamia means? Huh? Yeah, but what does the word mean? I didn't ask what it describes. I believe that Mesopotamia means the meeting of two rivers. Because where the Tigris and the Euphrates meet, where is that? Is that the... I mean, like... Huh? No, it's some... This, is it the Gulf? Or what? The basin of some sort, in other words, that these are the two... The Persian Gulf, that's the... And Mesopotamia means the meeting of the two rivers, because all of Mesopotamia is between the two rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates, the Chidekel. Now, we had earlier in Daniel, where he was on the river Uli, Yuval Uli, Yecheskel saw prophecy on Nahar Kivar, the river Kivar, which was in Bavel, and the Mepharshim say that even when, you know, it's not under all circumstances that God is going to bring prophecy or even Ruach HaKodesh out in the Golah, unless it's near water. There's something to the purity, the sense of spiritual purity that is imparted by water. That's why Yecheskel sees prophecy by water, and the Ruach HaKodesh of Daniel is by rivers. That's why he mentions, otherwise, why do I have to know that it was, he was standing by the Chidekel? Who cares? What difference does it make where he was standing? Yes? That was Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu gives instructions that they should write the prophecy of the Churban. And what did they call it? What did they call it in America? Deep six it? In the, what was it? In the Nixon Watergate days, it seems one of his people dumped some important documents into the Potomac. He deep sixed it into the Potomac. Chaim Akasha, why deep six? But this is Yirmiyahu. It was maybe 6 feet under, yeah. So Yirmiyahu says that put the Nevuah into the...
But Esther was in the Nevuah. Was there any water in Shushan?
Yeah, the only thing we don't know about... Was there water in Shushan? Was there water in Shushan? Right! She remembers! Very good! One of the beauties of Sefer, of Megillat Esther, is that there's, you know, on the one hand it seems to be like some kind of a funny story, you know, a romantic story, not terribly serious. It's so serious and so precise and it's so perfect in everything that's written. You go through the Sefer and you will find that sometimes they talk about Shushan and sometimes Shushan Habira. And for years people didn't know, anybody who learned Gemara knew the difference. But the scholars, you understand, what's Shushan and what's Shushan Habira? It was over 100 years ago that they were doing excavations over there. Now, they didn't find a Megillat Esther or a Gragar, no. But what they found out was the following. Shushan Habira was the Kiryah, the seat of government. All government offices, all government personnel lived there. And it was separated from the main city of Shushan by a river. And you'll go through the Megillah, you'll see the Hadas, after the decree, the edict is issued to destroy the Jewish people, so it says, the Hadas nitna b'Shushan habira, the ha'ir Shushan navocha, the law is promulgated in Shushan habira, but the city of Shushan is perplexed. And there must be at least 7-8 psukim where Shushan and Shushan Habira are sort of next to each other. And if you understand that Shushan Habira was part of it, I mean, there are many cities like this. I don't know.
Budapest.
I was going to say Budapest. Why did we? Budapest. Well, many cities. I mean, Leningrad. So outside of Leningrad, there's a big, like Alcatraz. One of their big prisons was Dostoevsky imprisoned over there. You know, so to go from one part of the city to the other, you have to cross water. And the Gemara. Anybody who learns the Gemara says, after Esther gives instructions to Mordechai, we'll fast, you fast, gather the Jewish people and fast. It says, Vayavor Mordechai. And Mordechai passed over. And nobody knows what it means. Says the Gemara, Vayavor Mordechai, Ovar Arkuma de Mayo. He passed over a body of water. So you learn the Gemara, you knew that Shushan, and Shushan Abiru took over. She was on water. She was by water all the time. Oh, we didn't even. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The shear was planned today to finish the whole chapter. But as Saturday night, I lifted my eyes for Ada and I saw Hine Ish Echad, a man, Lavush Badin. Lavush Badin. Bad is, well, not the way in modern Hebrew, bad is material. Bad in Torah is linen. The Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, and we're going to have that in next week's Sefer, not Tazvir Mitzor, we're going to have that later on in Achrei Mot and Kedoshim, that the Kohen Gadol should have Ketonet Bad Yilbash, Umichnisei Bad Yiyuab, so it's all made out of linen. Here is the man who's wearing white linen. Umatnav Chagurim, and his, what is?
Waist
is girded with a girdle, a belt of ketem uvaz. Ketem is gold string that comes from a place called uvaz. Most probably uvaz is called uvaz because paz, which also means gold, came from there. Ugviyato kitarshish, and his body is like Tarshish. Tarshish is one of the gems that was in the Choshen Mishpat. Tarshish Shoham V'yashbe, a Tarshish stone, and I'll have to tell you something. It was in the wee hours of this morning that I went over everything again, and I noticed a footnote here in the Das Mikra that thrilled me, and I'm going to check it out to see if I'm right. Simply the following. Tarshish is described as something that has the color blue, the color of the sea. Aqua marine, a sug of Evan Bevil. I don't know what Bevil is.
Barrel?
Yeah. But the footnote in Das Mikra says the following. The A, Dov Ginsburg, Nispachot Ledat Mikra. One of the members of my shul, little fellow, cute guy, called Dov Ginsburg, who's a geologist. And it seems so, you know, he has one mitzvah. I mean, he does many mitzvahs, but one mitzvah, he makes sure that every Shabbos, when I come into shul, in my shtender in shul, there are all of the Shabbos sheets that come out, the Shabbat, the Shabbato, the Sichos HaShavua, the Or HaHar. You kidding me? I come home with all of this. It's unbelievable. I need 500 years to read all of this stuff. Huh? So like everything, I choose, I take a look, then he even occasionally make sure that I have Ornette and Kahana Chai and what's the other one? Dov Begun of... all of them. Dov Ginsburg is a lovely, lovely fellow, but he's a geologist, and it seems that he did the scientific work to figure out what this is. So Tarshish, I have to see him in shul. Oy Reb Dov, you gave me a lot of hanoah over here. Gviatos of the body, the Gvia is the body of this man, who a person who looks like a human being, and his body is blue like the sky. Uponov, this is not a political statement, Upanav Kimare Barak, and his face is like the face of Barak. Barak means something that shines, something that exudes tremendous light. Ve'inav kilapidei esh, and his eyes are like torches of fire. Uzrootav umargalotav, his arms and his legs, kein nechoshet kalal, like very fine copper. That's a brown or a tan or a yellow color. We're talking about all of these colors, and the Mephoreshim say, when you go through the pasuk, you see all the colors, because something that has so many colors, in other words, in full technicolor, leaves an imprint on the mind. He doesn't see just grays and blacks. He sees everything in brilliant color, and it becomes engraved upon his mind. The kol devarav kikol hamon, and the sound of the words of this man, it's really a malach, and we're going to see who the malach is. The sound of his voice is kikol hamon, like the voice of a multitude. Like there's something overwhelming and overpowering by the sound of his words. We'll just read this pasuk, and we'll have to pick up from here, because the Gemara talks about this pasuk. Ve'ra'iti ani Daniel levadi et ha-mara'ah, I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. V'ha'anashim asher pagdu imi, and the people who were with me, lo ra'u et ha-mara'ah, did not see the vision. Avol charodo gedol anochla aleihem, but great trembling befell them. Vayibrichu ve'heichavei, and they fled to hide. Number one, this is the only place in all of Daniel where Daniel has a vision and there are other people with him. Every other vision he was alone. Who were the people that were with him? According to the Gemara and Megillah, the people who were with him were Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And here we're going to have to come into something that's very fascinating. They're prophets and they don't see. I alone saw this vision. I saw this angel with all the brilliant and powerful colors. I see it. They didn't see it, and even though they didn't see it, they fled. So the Gemara in Megillah says, why did they flee? They fled because even if they didn't see it, there was something in their neshama. They sensed that they were in the presence of something that is unusual and exceptional. So the Gemara says, Ihu adif mi hem, Daniel is better than them. Because he saw, Inhu Adif Minayu, they are better than him, says the Gemara, because Inhu Nevi'i, they're prophets, and he's not a prophet. Which means there is the one definitive statement in the Gemara where the Gemara says that Daniel is not a prophet, that he's different than Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And that's really the main statement around which everything revolves. There it's clear that he's not a prophet. That's on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph in Megillah. The listing of the 48 prophets comes, I think, Daf Yudalid or Daf Tetvav, and that's why Rashi removes Daniel from the list of the 48 prophets, because of the Gemara earlier, based on this pasuk, I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, but the people who were with me didn't see it. Because the Gemara assumes that the people who were with him were Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. There is an opinion that says it was Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah, but it's very difficult to put in Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah, because the Gemara says about them that the people who were there were prophets, and we don't know of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being prophets. So here we're talking about an unbelievable vision, and we're going to see Daniel is going to describe exactly what happens to him physically. He's going to, in a sense, faint. There's going to be a paralysis that's going to overcome him. It's going to be such an overwhelming vision that is going to prepare him really for what is going to be said in the next two chapters. Okay, everybody.